Let's sit. No more. Let's learn. Let's evolve. Let's talk. Today is Let's Talk Business with your host, Jai Lawton.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Business. My name is Jai Lawton, a Bidjara man from Central West Queensland and your host for the weekly Let's Talk Business series. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands we broadcast here in the West End of Brisbane and all across the country, wherever you are listening. I'd like to acknowledge the unceded sovereignty of all First Nations people across the many nations in this continent and acknowledge all elders, past and present. Today, we are speaking to Phil Usher, the CEO of First Nations Foundation, an organisation that is dedicated to providing financial literacy and financial well-being to First Nations people. Hello and welcome to the program, Phil.
Hey, hello. Thanks for having me on, eh?
Nah, no worries, brother. Can we start with your mob and your country?
Yeah, mob. Blood mob's dad's born a place, Central West New South Wales, called Tullamore. Real tiny town out near Park, Dubbo kind of area. And then Nan's born in Wellington, but hey, I've only been in that country a couple of times. I grew up in Tamworth with the Gummeroy fellas. So know a lot more people out that way, eh?
Yeah, Tamworth, home of country music, eh? You're fitting right in well here.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I said when I went to the studio. I'm like, this is like Tamworth in the 90s, some of the memorabilia.
Yeah, we certainly got it. And can you tell us about your journey in the finance space? Finance is something that's not usually first-hand to blackfellas. So, yeah, tell us about that journey.
Yeah, you're right. There's not many blackfellas get in the accounting finance space. For me, it was this random book, that my sister bought me when I was 16. Like, hadn't shown any interest in finance before. My older sister just bought this money book for me. And I was sitting there looking at it, and I'm like, oh, I'll give it a read. Got nothing else to do in Tamworth, but it's 40 degrees outside and you got red hair, so I'm trying to have a read. I was there reading, and I liked it. I've worked out how to calculate your personal tax and how compounding interest works. And I remember feeling like, geez, I'm like an adult now. I know how this works. Thinking that other adults knew how it worked, but I've since learned that they don't. And then it kind of just went from that book, eh? I did business studies in year 11 and 12, then did a business degree at uni, and then eventually did like a diploma in financial planning, and yeah, I just enjoyed it for some strange reason.
Yeah, wow. And it is, and when it comes to business, you know, finance is absolutely one of the fundamentals. Like, you know, we don't necessarily have to be accountants per se, but if you don't have a foundational understanding of finance, it puts you in a spot of bother, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And it's one of those things that I call educate and delegate. Just have enough to look after yourself, but give it to someone else that does professionally. But you just got to make sure they're not taking advantage of you, because we see that with some fellows in community. That look after the funds, they make it disappear.
Yeah, we've seen it time and time again. You know, our Aboriginal organisations getting rolled from these accountants that aren't, you know, mob or aren't from that community, and yeah, it's no good.
Yeah, that's it. You think, you know, accountant will look after it, they'll be right, they'll do the right thing, but just got to check up on them, make sure they're all honest. Most of them are, but yeah, just being across the finances is always good.
Yeah, absolutely. And For those that don't know about First Nations Foundation, where you're the CEO, what is it that First Nations Foundation does?
Yeah, so we provide financial education and wellbeing training for communities right across Australia. And we really focus on the financial prosperity part. So we don't work with some of the fellows that are, you know, really, really struggling and in hardship, because we find that usually they'll need like a financial counsellor and someone to work with them one-on-one and someone to advocate for them if they got in a bit of trouble. Mm. We focus with some of the fellows that are, you know, they got some kind of income, usually through employment, and just helping understand their budget, managing money, putting some money away, buying a property, looking at superannuation. So we focus more on that aspect, and we do that combination of face-to-face sessions out in community, or because of the last 3 years we've done a lot online as well.
Yeah, tell us about that superannuation initiative. I remember reading up on prior to this interview around the different facets of work that you mob do, and that superannuation initiative sounded like it was, yeah, achieving some great outcomes.
Yeah, so we had an event called Big Super Day Out. We haven't run it since COVID because too much of a logistical nightmare, but what the concept was is we take superannuation companies, Centrelink, tax office, and partner with financial counsellors and a community organisation, we go out to Aboriginal communities and we help all the fellas find the lost super that they didn't know they had. So, you know, if you worked a couple of jobs throughout your career and you didn't change your super over into one account, chances are you got superannuation sitting there somewhere. And some of the old fellas, you know, they'd be retired, they'd be 68, 69, and then these fellas find like 15, 20 grand in super that they could just access that day. They just forgot about it from a job they had like 10 years ago or something. So we did that for a number of years. Did it to 21 communities and helped find $24 million in super for followers across all those communities over that period of time.
Yeah, wow, that's unreal. And probably to see the look on their mob's face, eh, when you realise it's almost like an unwritten cheque that you've just found, you know, just the pot of gold under the rainbow that they've just sort of didn't know they had, must be rewarding.
Good, eh? Yeah, they're real happy. But the thing is, you think we could get any testimonials? No one wants to put their name out there when they got money. Followers will find them out and ask for it, so... No one's going to our camera and saying, yeah, I'm Phil, I just found 20 grand. They go real quiet, mate.
Oh, your phone will be going red hot. It'll be loan day all over.
Oh, 100%, eh?
Yeah. And just on that super, like, I've seen a couple of things blow up pretty recently on social media around, you know, the things we know about, you know, closing the gap and the age bracket of our mob versus the general population. But then the fact that you can't access your super until, you know, a decade more or more after we're supposed to have passed away, given the closing the gap stats. What do we need to do in that space?
Yeah, so in addition to our training, we lobby government and industry groups. So that's where, fancy name for when you can get your super. So you're right, at the moment, life expectancy in Blackhall is about 71, and most people access their super when they're 65, maybe. So, you've got 6 years to enjoy it. And that's assuming that you're healthy in those last 6 years too, which a lot of mob aren't. So they can't enjoy that quality of retirement. So, you know, we're working with government on lowering that preservation age and looking at accessing super earlier, but... The best conversation that we can have is you can use it as a bit of an estate planning tool. So, you know, you may not be able to enjoy it in retirement, but, you know, for the first time in probably ever, we can give the next generation a good start. Like, you can set it up and nominate who gets your money in retirement. So I know that's not what it's designed for, but that usually resonates with a lot of fellas, knowing that they can leave the next generation with a bit of a head start that they might not have.
Yeah, and that generational wealth is something that's so important. You know, if you look back on our history, we weren't considered human beings until 1967, so couldn't participate in the economy, let alone generate wealth, let alone the stuff that was stolen from the mob. So I think that's the exciting prospect of that generational wealth and instilling that financial knowledge in mob so that they can plan financially for not only their future, but the future generations.
That's it. And the thing we've got to understand, like, you know, we've got some bad stats around money and not having a lot of savings, but at the end of the day, we're really new to the concept, eh? Like I said, 67, even after that, we still weren't allowed to work in a lot of places. So, and even if we were, we had enough money to buy a bit of food, pay rent, and that's about it. There's nothing left for a rainy day. You just got to hope it doesn't come. So we're still quite new to that money management and intergenerational wealth concept.
Yeah, and there's something about mob, you know, we can live off, we can live off 50 cents for a week, but we can spend $1 million in an hour, you know, we're very good at that.
And all that, they say every Aboriginal community is different. That might be true, except for shoes. The number of followers at training sessions, they say they want to buy up on the flash of shoes every year. It's incredible. Doesn't matter where we go. Doesn't matter. Always the shoes.
Yeah, there's a listener out there, Joshy Creamer. I'm going to give him a shout out. His shoes collection. He's got every colour of R.M. Williams out there. Works hard for his money.
Hey,
but,
watch it.
Yeah.
Go on the R.M. Williams.
Yeah, well, that's what a barrister gets you.
He's a
black fella barrister.
Out.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And when we talk about, you know, financial stress and pressure, you know, those things, they're all intrinsic to our well-being as human beings, you know. And so how do we start to measure our financial literacy as mob and then measure the impact of the programs and initiative around financial well-being that you fellas are doing?
Yeah, so the first thing, like one of our core values is is culture first. And probably first hour or so in our training, we don't even mention money, eh? Don't even mention a dollar figure or anything. We just talk about what it is to be Aboriginal and grow up with money and how it kind of clashes with some of our perceived cultural values as well. And this is all delivered by Aboriginal trainers. So all these fellows are talking from a lived experience, but, you know, you think that you can't keep your Aboriginality if you're acquiring a lot of money. That's like a misconception that you think that it might be a bit of a, like a white fella way or somehow, you know things when you hear growing up when you, you know, I heard them coming from the housing commission that you're greedy if you want too much money or it makes you evil and stuff like that.
Yep.
So we talk about that conversation and say that, you know, you can actually do both. You can still be quite connected to culture and look after yourself and your family when you have money. And someone told me before that, what's her name? Michelle Evans there at Melbourne Uni. She was saying that it may even be more so because, you know, the more money you have and if you're going into your role, you actually get exposed to different cultures.
Mm.
And I was thinking that's so true. Like some of the fellows in Tamworth, or they kind of stay in Tamworth and only experience that culture, but for me, I've been fortunate enough to work in Redfern and Larkspurs and do some work up in Cairns, and then we've got Thursday Island later this year and Broome, and you go through and you experience all these different cultures, which I probably wouldn't have been able to do if I, you know, just kind of stayed there in Tamworth in the housing commission. So we have those kind of conversations to let fellows know that you can do the two, and then we talk about what we've kind of touched on when. And fellas ask for money all the time. Like one of the most extreme cases we had, a fellow up in top end of WA working in the mines for 180, 200 grand a year. And he threw it in because there was too much stress for his family asking him for money all the time.
Mm.
Just went back on Centrelink because there was less pressure.
Yeah.
So we talk about how do you set healthy boundaries for yourself. It's not just saying no. They might be saying, if you're struggling for food, Salvo's down the road can actually hook you up pretty quickly. It won't cost you anything. You might have to swallow your pride a bit, but they'll make sure everyone's fed if you're really struggling for food and that.
Mm.
And just trying to, come up with alternatives and set healthy boundaries for yourself.
Yeah, and we've got a notion of sharing wealth too, don't we? I had Auntie Pat Torres on here who runs a range of different businesses in the native food and cultural tourism industries up in Broome there, and she was talking about how her business model is built around not only sharing of that knowledge but sharing of that wealth as well. You know, not having just her become wealthy on her own. It's about, the distribution of that wealth from her business to the community.
Yeah, and that doesn't change, eh? That'll stay with you regardless how much money you have. You look at all the footballers, like, look at Latrell Mitchell, and he's, 1.2 million a year, and he bought his parents' home back out in Tararina.
Mm.
So he wouldn't be able to do that if he didn't knuckle down and master his craft. So it's almost the more you have, the more you can give away later on. Impact you can have with other followers.
Yeah, we're innovators in all things. We lead innovation, us mob. And I remember we had Kevin Cropinieri on the program on our show not too long ago, the comedian, and he talked about our blackfellas invented Afterpay, you know. Purchase now, pay later, and pay that loan back. So, you know, that's certainly in our DNA.
True, yeah, it's not foreign to us at all.
And we actually used to have a program here called Money Woman, hosted by the one and only Stephen Oliver, and we'll have to dig those up because there'll be good archives there to include in some of the programming.
Oh, that'd be funny, Paul. That I wouldn't even get him out to do a refresher or something.
Oh yeah, it was classic. I still remember the opener, Money Woman. Yeah, she's taking your bungu or something like that. But it was great.
Hey, that's how we learn too, for humour, right?
Yeah,
we can't
absolutely.
Be too serious in ourselves. Have a good laugh at ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Business, where we're talking all things Indigenous business with our guest, Phil Usher, the CEO of First Nations Foundation. You've had experience yourself, Phil, in starting, acquiring and selling a number of online businesses. Tell us about the emergence of business and the online digital technology space.
Yeah, the online stuff, it evens the playing field, eh? Because you look back however many decades ago, to do well in business, you almost had to have like a factory or shop front or something that cost a lot of money up front to produce materials or to sell goods and services. But now you can pick up your smartphone and your start a business on Instagram, a YouTube account, e-commerce business, and you don't even have to leave your room. So I think that's been really cool in terms of having the potential to close the wealth gap a little bit. You don't need a lot to get started. You just need a bit of savviness, and you can do quite well.
Yeah, no, it is certainly changing the way and disrupting the way, you know, that just people are doing business just generally. If you look at, you know, Airbnb and Uber and all these other business ventures that have taken off now, they're all built on these digital online platforms, and it's the place to be.
Yeah, if you can get into that space, I mean, yeah, that's where the future of business is. Like, even if you think you're not a digital business, you should be very much across the digital aspect of any kind of business.
Mm, absolutely. Good advice there. And you've been, speaking of advice, you've been a former business advisor with the Business Centre in Newcastle there, work with business owners to grow and scale their companies. Tell us about some of the businesses you worked with there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good businesses, you see. Fellas just have, you know, ideas that they want to bring to life, and some people got, you know, full-blown businesses. But I think the one that stands out is a young woman in her early 20s created an app called Eatsy now. And what it is basically Tinder for food. So you go on there at night, you're looking for a feed, and it just comes up with all these real good pictures of food, and you swipe left or right based on how you feel.
Yeah, right.
And then you just go through, and by the end of it, it's, you know, you've got a list of the foods that you're feeling. Like, you know, if you're not feeling like burgers, they're gone. I've been with my woman for 20 years, so I don't know which way you're swiping on those apps, but it'll create a list that you've kind of narrowed down, and then you go through and order it from that restaurant. And she won an event like 100K and went overseas to the US to raise more capital. So I thought that was really clever.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things about Newcastle, though, because I did a lot of stuff in the startup space in Sydney, and they're all about, you know, let's raise capital, let's try and get a good exit, we'll get a 10x return, and, you know, we'll sell this thing and retire. And I took that mentality to Newcastle, and those followers don't necessarily care. There's like, now, whatever, if I can knock off at 12 on a Friday and catch a surf, then that'll do me for business. So it was interesting seeing the different mentality.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, you know, business isn't for everyone. It's, you know, it's a tough game, and especially early on, but it can create a lifestyle, you know, being your own boss and knocking off at 12 so you can go for a surf, and, yeah, it creates those opportunities.
It does. It's good for that, yeah. It can be good for that.
Yeah, and you've, you know, worked across the business sector, as you said, from startup through to, you know, Eatsy, the Tinder for food, as you called it. What are some of the biggest challenges that our mob face in business?
Yeah, you know, the biggest one that I don't know gets talked about a lot, I think it's how to charge, how to get the right price, because pricing is all psychological. It's based on your sense of value and sense of worth. And like we said before, we've been placed on missions and had the government made to look after us, and we haven't had the chance to own businesses or be employed. Then when we go out and start our own business, really, we don't know our worth. Like, you think you're starting a consultant and you're like, watch out, I'm gonna charge $50 an hour here, I'm gonna make real good money. Meanwhile, followers charge about $1,500 a day and not even a full day, it's like 6 hours is what the market rate is. And then, you know, you have this conversation with yourself, like, oh, I can't charge that, I'm not as good as those followers, I'm not. So it's a whole process you have to go through to be able to charge what you're actually worth. And I find that more so with mob, because we haven't come from, I didn't know anyone that owned a business growing up. And when you're around other business owners, you start to see that when they talk about some of these large amounts and how much they're charging out a day or how much they're charging the hour, and then you kind of get comfortable with it. But, you know, I grew up with dollars just working, and they're on $20-25 an hour, so... Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things for us to overcome.
And I was understanding that pricing structure too. It might look like $50 an hour, but then you've got to have tax and super and all other things that come from that, and it gets down quite low.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's a gross amount. What else have you got to pay? The fuel to get out there, the accommodation if you're consulting out that way. So, yeah, looks good to start with, but making sure you get very specific on all those costs and that you're actually making some good money from it.
Yeah. And so what do we need to do to overcome those type of challenges? Like, is it further education or...?
Yeah, further education helps, understanding the process. Like, one of the things, that it's bizarre, but in business, if you double your prices, you can afford to lose half your customers and you'll end up exactly the same. Mm. In fact, it'll be better off because you can better service those customers that remain because they're paying more, but you've got less other customers to worry about. Mm. So even understanding stuff like that contributes to it. But pricing's really psychological, and you just kind of do it in increments, eh? Like, if you're a consultant charging $50 an hour, you might go up to $65, and then you'll be real nervous when you send your first quote or invoice out. But then you say, hey, no one even cared. No one even questioned that amount. And then, you know, you keep going. We do that, and I won't go into detail of who it was, but we put in a funding proposal, and it was like $200,000 or something. They come back and said, oh, you know, we think you need an extra $50,000 to do the work. And hey, we didn't even ask for it. They just an extra $50,000 on top. So
yeah, wow.
It's just consistently doing it. You kind of grow, and you grow in confidence to be able to do that well.
Yeah, and so we spoke about the challenges as businesses. What about as a business sector? Like, what are the big challenges that we face as an Indigenous business sector right now?
I think it's that commercial acumen. I think we're really creative. We come up with some of the best ideas that I've seen, but we just don't have those followers to go to ask, how do we make this big? You know, I was part of this business coaching group, and it was Aboriginal concept, coaching Aboriginal businesses, and going around the room, sharing our experiences, and one fellow, he said, I had this idea for my startup. So I just went to my friends and family, asked them for money, and I raised $250,000.
Hey, look at
it. I'm like, hey, I don't even know that. I don't know many people that do that.
Yeah.
So I think that part for him, he understood what had to happen. I didn't even know angel investing or venture capital was a thing until, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I still can't believe strangers will give you money for an idea that you have. It is not even any proof that it works. They're just looking to make more money. So I think it's a commercial acumen. Like, we have some really good ideas, but knowing how to take that to market and how to scale that and how the banks look at you when they want to lend out money, I just think that's the part that we just don't know because our old people never had the chance to do it, and so they don't have the knowledge to pass down like some of our non-Indigenous friends, where they go to their auntie or uncle or mum and dad and ask about business and growth. So, the innovation part, I think we're sweet in, just understanding that commercial part, which is a bit foreign to us.
Yeah, no, that's right on there. And so just in wrapping up, I want to transport you in time to 50 years from now. So it's 2073, what does Indigenous business look like?
Hey, old fella now. I'll be 86.
Yeah. Uncle.
Hey, should be by then, hopefully. Business in 50 years, I think, I don't know if this is all audacious or basic level thinking, but, geez, I reckon if we're treated almost like non-Indigenous people are now, where we walk into a bank and we're not seen as a deficit or a sort of a problem or a statistic in the media. It's, you know, we want to go to a bank. We've got a house we can put up as collateral or equity in our home, and we can get a loan with no kind of special treatment. We don't need to see a business advisor because the white fella on the other end of the counter understands us. He knows our story. They've been through training, and we can just easily flow through the system. There's no need to kind of specialise any service for us because we're just kind of part of it. We know how business works. The rest of Australia knows how we work, and yeah, we can just kind of go through seamlessly. I think it'd be that'd be a good goal for 50 years, I think.
So in 2073, we've eliminated racism, so we can just walk in and be treated with respect.
Mate, that's it. That's all we need to do. I mean, it's taken us 200 odd years to get here now, but I'm very bullish on the next 50. It's just going to implode.
Yeah, and it is. There's timings happening. You know, there's all sorts of political realms happening at the moment, both in a state level, you know, in different jurisdictions, and we've got, you know, the federal conversation happening around referendums and all sorts of different things. There's certainly a swell that's that's happening around the Indigenous affairs.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a massive, and I have to pay respect to the women in our community. You look at the politicians, and what are there, like 11, 12 black fellas in Parliament, and I think 11 of them are women.
Yeah.
They're just dominating, leading the way across everything. So, and that's us in general, eh? We matriarchal society. Women usually pave the way and been a reason for a lot of our success. So I think that'll be the case moving forward as well.
Absolutely. Big shout out to all our sisters and our aunties and all the mob that paved the way to get us to where we are today. And I want to thank you very much for your time, Phil, and for coming onto the program. It's been a pleasure.
Well, good. That was good yarn. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So you've been listening to Let's Talk. If you want to hear more from today or catch another episode of Let's Talk, you can just head on over to our website, AAA.org.au. Thank you for your company.
No more whispering in our mind. Let's Talk, Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au, proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.